How close do you want me talking to this?
Close as you want.
Yeah, you can do you can do like the you can do like the Noel Gallagher. Is it Noel Gallagher or Liam Gallagher?
No, I mean actually not probably not so like that.
Yeah, but that's because you're making a rank noise with your mouth. You don't have to do that. That's also what I don't like. I don't,
are we recording?
Yeah, we're recording.
Oh. This is it.
This is it, man.
Wasn't ready.
I don't like the noise of people smiling. You know that.
Said that quite a few times. Actually.
Yeah, that's why. But like, that's because you're
really like, even if you're like looking at a picture.
I don't mind looking at
a
picture.
Just a little bit of a noise that you can't really pick up.
So it's this, ready?
It's because you're always hanging out with people with dry mouths. At your druggy raves.
Water right on cue.
And it's this. This is the noise it makes. You ready?
Oh.
Yeah, it's just a really not pleasant noise. I don't know. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Private Parts Podcast. This is where we read the most intimate and sordid details of our lives. Joined with us today is Mr. Edward Williams, my business partner, friend, colleague.
Lover.
Sometimes. Everything, man. Dude, hey, what's up, man?
Hello. Thank you very much for having me, boys.
Hey,
nice to be here.
Before we start this, everyone, we got to shout a big shout out to our sponsors of the episode, iZettle. We have a good relationship with iZettle because we were one of the... we were pretty much one of their first customers.
Big claim.
Is that a big claim?
we can make it.
They started the business and they were like, who should we approach first? Let's aim for the big fish. Let's go for Kenny.
But the funny thing is that Ed and I, we started Kenny Kittens, 7 years ago now? 7 years ago. And when did we first use iZettle?
Day one, pretty much. First pop-up shop, 2012. Yeah.
They're good. Do you know what? I actually just bought a coffee and paid on iZettle.
You did?
Yeah.
Really?
Except they're everywhere.
I didn't want one, but thanks.
No, that's all right.
But this is the thing. So, Ed, why don't you give like a little... You don't really have a Wikipedia, so why don't you give a little lowdown on yourself so everyone can know who
you
are?
How do you get a Wikipedia? Maybe I should look into that.
You've just written it yourself. Yeah, not okay. That I've written it myself.
Yeah.
I've never written...
Yours keeps getting deleted after you put it up.
No one deletes my Wikipedia.
Wikipedia, like the admin, keeps deleting Jamie's Wikipedia after he puts up like all this like weird fictions.
No one ever starts deleting my Wikipedia. But Ed, you know, give you a little background.
So, Ed Williams grew up in Wales, went to the University of Loughborough, studied industrial design and technology, which was great. If my mum and dad are listening. If they're not, then hated it. And then, yeah, had the pleasure of meeting you to start Candy Kittens. That was shortly after university. So I was mainly brand, design, marketing background. That's what I always loved. And then met you. You had this crazy idea to open a sweet shop.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of slowly evolved into something a bit more real and manageable.
A bit more serious. But this is the thing I think we want to like start with, right, is that all three of us here, we are entrepreneurs. We very much are. But what kind of makes you an entrepreneur, do you think? What attributes, Franz, what do you think make you an entrepreneur?
Well, I think certainly taking the initiative with an idea. Like, obviously, a lot of people just have ideas and don't actually do anything. I mean, I think the classic sign that you're not an entrepreneur is if you think, oh, well, I had the idea first, you know, but you're still like sitting there doing
talking about it.
Yeah, talking about it.
Execution is the entrepreneur.
That's the actual defining factor is the execution, yeah.
That's what defines being an entrepreneur, actually just going ahead and doing it.
Executing it. You know, not necessarily succeeding. Obviously, you know, people execute things and fail, but that's just a part of entrepreneurship. You know, the process is one of trial and error.
But this is also the thing, right? I feel like, you know, Ed, you and I work so well with each other because we are, you know, we are very different with each other. Like, as in, we are two very different people, but we're very similar in so many different ways. And I think that's what's quite good about it. We heard the statistic the other day that something like 70 or 80% of startups in the UK have a co-founder. And Francis, you've had a co-founder before, but also you've had a business without a co-founder.
Yeah.
And what's the difference between those kind of ones?
Well, I guess, you know, I've had experience in startups with partners, without partners. You know, definitely
numerous partners.
Well, no, so, yeah, it depends on the project. But like, yes, if there's something that really, in my opinion on it, is there if there's something that you really can't do, like there's a skill set that you, you know, you lack, right? That's integral to your business's success. Then you know that it definitely makes sense to bring on a partner. But if at the front end you can do most of the stuff yourself and add as much value as you can, you know, which isn't the case for everyone. I know I realize a lot of people maybe are a bit more inexperienced in business and don't, you kind of have to, you know, have a team. And there is that impetus of two people going in the same direction, which is
what
valuable.
About the cider? Is that just you?
That's just me, yeah. But no,
like, so you've got all the skills.
So
cider.
Well, I mean, I launched it myself, yeah, but I probably wouldn't have been able to do that necessarily if I hadn't had the experience in other startups where I was working with partners. Because obviously you learn a lot from partners as well.
I haven't learned anything from Jamie.
I don't think that's true.
I really have.
Yeah, go on then. Go on. What have you learned from me?
Do everything yourself.
Get on with it.
I had to wear a nice hat.
Yeah, that's true.
Be really nice and polite and friendly to everybody. Smile all the time. Energy. Jamie's got lots of energy. Yeah. I've learned the energy.
But I don't think that's a good attribute to being an entrepreneur and businessman.
No, I have learned a lot from you. Jamie's very, very good at spotting new opportunities.
Yeah.
So Jamie's definitely the guy with the ideas.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And sort of looking at what's happening around you and noticing niches. And I think sometimes probably doesn't even realize that they're a niche.
I think that's actually
a real skill. You know, to be able to spot things, but then hopefully we kind of take it back to the office and then turn that into something manageable.
Well, that's completely it. And Francis, you can do it. You can tell us about your business. Ed and I, that is exactly it, right? I think I'm a good entrepreneur, but I'm not a very good businessman. And also I think about the most important thing about when you start a business is about being self-aware, about understanding what your positives are, but also understanding what your negatives are. And I think a lot of people go and... You know, I mean, and we can talk openly about this. You know, we've all done business and things like that haven't gone right. And, you know, we've all done that. And that's because probably at the beginning, we thought we could do so many different things and we probably didn't understand it. And a lot of it is based on luck as well. I mean, a huge amount of luck and things like that come into it.
Yeah, I think there are, you know, some businesses, you know, and some failures are, you know, expensive lessons. But you know, the expensive lessons are the ones you really remember, and often there are.
But that's key, right? That is key. So it's a lesson. I think that's so important that people don't realize is that it is. The failures are a pretty expensive lesson, but also the most valuable lesson as well.
Yeah. Well, you won't make that mistake again. but I do think, you know, obviously a successful business is the aligning of various different stars, right? And you know, part of it is having a good idea. A huge part of it is the execution and the team behind it. Not necessarily just in the inception, but obviously when you're growing, having the right team, I'm sure you guys know, you guys have a great team at Candy Kittens, is so integral to the success 100%. Of the business.
I mean, the people make or break it, without a doubt, yeah.
And so the kind of key factor, I think, and for me personally, if I'm investing in a business, it doesn't really matter what the idea is. If they're an impressive group of people who are wanting to do something, I'll invest in them over an idea, because they'll work out what the idea is.
Yeah, yeah. So and whether back in the jockey, not the horse.
You're saying you'd invest in me. That is kind of you, man.
I didn't say that.
Yeah, you put subconsciously. Subliminally, you were saying that. Subliminally, what is it?
I think you guys have a great team over at Camp.
Well, this is, you know, and this is the great thing about our business, and I say this all the time, and it's so about team, and it really is that important. You know, we run a confectionery candy business. It's this double meaning. We run a confectionery business, which is like a gourmet confectionery business. And as Ed said, we kind of stumbled across this sort of gourmet range, sort of a price point, a sort of a premium product by accident, because we just wanted to make sweets which were good and delicious and all that kind of stuff. But the team is so important. And I think it's a lot of the time it's a bit unfair, I think, because and I sort of relate to the likes of like Formula One, where Lewis Hamilton gets all the praise. He's the one spraying the champagne. He's the one in all the press. He's the one, you know, getting congratulated for winning the races. But in fact, it's the kind of engine that actually helps most of the thing. He's just the one executing it in a sense.
Well, it's like everyone saying that Steve Jobs was like this godlike figure, but yes. You know. The people who are actually
the actual people building like, machines.
He's like, yeah. Okay, here's my record collection. Just put it in this tiny little thing. Is that what is it? What is it? It's that Bill Burr sketch where he's like, okay, what? I don't give the, I don't care. All he did was like give loads of child labour jobs.
Okay, but we also, I think what the most important thing, because a lot of people are going to be listening to this episode, because it's sponsored by iZettle, who we love. You know, iZettle is all about startup business, things like that. You know, the question that everyone always asks, and it's the sort of cheesy one, I suppose, but what are the biggest things that you've learned from starting up from the beginning? So, Ed, what is the biggest thing that you've learned? But really dig deep for this. Don't go on, like, surface way. What have you really learned at the beginning?
The first thing that always springs to mind is patience.
Do you know what? I was about to say that. That's something that people undervalue and underappreciate is how long it actually takes to...
Yeah, and it's something that I still haven't... I'm not very good at, and we still don't have enough patience, I think. Things take so much longer to come to fruition than you ever could imagine.
But exactly, yeah. But with patience, you can move mountains, and it's those incremental daily gains that get you to your destination. But people think that it's an overnight thing, like that, you know, especially, you know, when I was a young entrepreneur just starting out,
when I was a young Baptist starting out,
I'm 30 now, you know. I think we're all still relatively young, but in reality, I kind of been doing it for a long time. So when I first started out, I expected things to move so much faster, and for what I deemed success to be reached in a much shorter time period. But actually, what I kind of now know is that the success that I extracted from it was in the knowledge I've gained from all those different ventures.
Absolutely. And I think also then that patience and time gives you in the end confidence to be able to achieve those bigger things. And I think actually when we look back this week, Jamie and I, somebody sent us a photograph, emailed us a photograph of our first ever meeting with Sainsbury's. I don't know why there was even a photo taken when I look back at that.
Fucking ridiculous.
We both looked totally mental.
Yeah.
We were in there with
a grey
shirt and tie. And
I'm
now,
not even in a tie.
Now I can't remember the last time I
was
wearing
your grey three-piece suit.
Yeah.
I remember that.
I looked like some club promoter to Sainsbury's headquarters.
It just, you know, we were trying to be somebody we weren't at that time, I think. Trying to, okay, well, we've got a meeting with Sainsbury's. You must put a shirt on. I'm going to wear my grey three-piece. was something that, you know, now we probably know, just being ourselves, I think. And actually, that's a big part of selling your business, is selling yourself and what you're about. And people buy much more into that than any
Jamie's
kind of
got
tie.
A lot of experience selling himself.
Is that where you come in
with the business?
Hey, everyone, we're going to come back with private parts in just one second, just after this. And now back to the podcast. But okay, this point, it couldn't be more integral to people who are beginning a brand or beginning a business. And it's so true. It's about being yourself and being true to yourself. There are two things in this. Firstly, you've got to be... when I go back to the thing of being self-aware, a lot of people will go into business because they go, I want to go into business because I want to make a lot of money, and that's why I want to go make business, because I'm going to make all this shitloads of cash and da da da. But in fact, that's just not the case, because you're going to be doing this day in, day out, every single day. And as you said, Francis and Ed, it's the patience that you're going to have. Yep. So you're going to have to be so patient. It's going to take ages in order to do it. So therefore, you're going to have to do something that you love in order to go into it. And I think that's the first thing. You have to stay true to yourself. You can't say you're going to go and sell lawnmowers if you freaking hate mowing
the lawn. It's more like, I think, yeah, that, but you also have to just love the process, and you have to love all of the, you know, you have to love the journey and everything that journey entails, in the pitfalls and the tangents and the, you know, the obstacles that you're overcoming on a daily basis. And that's kind of, I think, you know, what I really learned, you know, starting this mine down in Africa, which every day there was a new...
Which, by the way, just before you get in, can we, you know, I think you need a big congratulations, because I think a lot of the time you sort of brush it past and you don't really talk about it. But, you know, Francis decided to give up in the smallest possible fame and fortune and things like that, and doing a television show and having quite a cushy little life in London and doing main charts and all that kind of stuff, and then you packed your bags and went and lived in the jungle for 3 years to set up a gold mine because you thought that was your next adventure, and that takes big old guts.
Yeah, I definitely. It was a big adventure. I mean, it was. We did some great things. We found gold, but you know, unfortunately, you know, the gold price went against us quite seriously over this. You know, the time that we were mining. So it was these things.
And that goes back to luck.
You
right?
know, well, like you know, you it, it's a volatile. Asset class, right? You know, it fluctuates, and because your margins are kind of you know, quite tight with a mining operation, you know, one change of the price, you know, can put your you can be a loss making business, right? So you're then faced with the decision of like, all right, wait it out and wait for the gold price to go back up, or throw in the towel and lose everything that you've invested. Mm-hmm. So it's a high risk, high reward exercise.
Yeah.
But when I went down there, gold was at 1700 an ounce. When I left, it was 1140.
All you're doing.
I wish I had control over the gold price. God.
But this is the thing, and that's going back to the process, right? You did it because it was an adventure and you loved doing it.
Well, no, I mean, I did it because I'm an entrepreneur. I saw an opportunity and I seized it, and I went and executed. I went and found a mine and set up a mining operation.
Sure,
but it wasn't like a lifestyle choice. Trust me, I didn't want to live in the jungle. Yeah. I didn't plan on being in the jungle for that long. It just so happened that I had to be hands on.
Yeah, but what I mean is the fact that like everyone, this going back to that thing where we're saying it, and I think me and you, I think all three of us agree on this. So the patience is key, and being true to yourself, and understanding that you have to have the ups and downs and things like that, and you're not going to be an overnight success. And there's two things. If you, I honestly believe, if you're an overnight success, it's the same with something like fame, right? If you're famous overnight, or
which happens,
it certainly happens. Sorry, and if you're famous overnight, or you have a business which is successful overnight, I think more often than not, the drop is a lot quicker.
There's loads of examples.
Business, if you suddenly get success and you suddenly just selling loads, and it does die quicker. Really honestly believe that.
I think that's absolutely the case. And I think the lessons that you learn through failure are what galvanize you against future failure, right? Like and there are so many cases of people who make success of themselves early on, and you know, hats off to them, but more often than not they end up losing their fortune, you know, and that's kind of
I think there's also those businesses that grow super quickly, particularly out of things like fads and fashion and trends, because actually there's always an opportunity for people to come in and exploit a trend.
Well,
look at
Snapchat, right?
Snapchat is a great example. Yeah.
You know, and he really, I think, is probably regretting not selling out now.
Yeah, I think they did sell out to NBC for like 500 million. I think, yeah.
Recently?
Yeah, not recently, maybe like 2 years ago. I think NBC chucked in 500 million.
He hasn't sold out.
He didn't sell the whole.
But weirdly enough with that, Snapchat is still huge. It's still huge amongst the younger age group. They just do it amongst
But it's just not growing, and it's not what people thought it would be.
Thought it was going to be. But you know, this is going back to this quote, which is so true that we always say, Ed, and someone told me ages ago, which is business is paid in two currencies, cash and experience. Take the experience first and the cash will come later. Yeah. You know, don't go into something because you want to make loads of money, do it because you want to experience it.
No, exactly.
And the cash will come later once you've experienced all of the ups and downs.
And enjoyed the experience and loved that whole process, exactly. Like Francis was saying.
And that goes back, and all fits in with, you know, going back to patience. And patience is what you really come to understand the value of with experience, you know. And it's funny because it all just links together, right? Like you with the experience, you understand the value of patience, and you get the patience, to understand the value of your business and making it valuable proposition.
But also, you know, we can sit here very easy and say, okay, look, you know, and everyone listening can just say, right, you boys were in main Chelsea. You supposedly have all this money. Like, it's pretty easy for you to set up a business and go ahead and do it. But you know.
Yeah, but that is under the false assumption that our parents are going to bankroll our business ventures, which is just not it's not the case, you know. But
even if something is bankrolled, that doesn't mean it's necessarily going to work as well.
No, exactly. I mean, and I think our parents aren't stupid, right? I mean, I personally haven't taken any money from my parents for my business, any money from my parents for my business ventures. But I don't think, like, if it's a good business and your parents want to back you, then I didn't see what, they're an investor, right?
But Ed, what do you think? Because we met each other in 2012. We met in a pub and we had a chat about this idea of a sweet shop and things like that. And you sort of suggested we change it this way and then that way. And then we started working together. And the funny thing is that we actually had this conversation literally two nights ago. Yeah. We were chatting to this guy, a good friend of Nick. And Nick's a big fan of the podcast. Hey, Nick, we know you're listening.
Shout out to Nick.
Nick's
yeah, nice.
Snaffling pig. If you love pork scratchings, go and grab a packet of those. They are simply delicious. but we were saying to him, the funny thing is when Ed and I started, he said to us when we were having dinner, he said, how did you, because this is the weird thing with co-founders, right? Is that you have to, co-founders, you can't be the same person, because if you're doing the same person, you're probably going to get on top of each other. But you also have to complement each other, and you have to, one person has to be this and one has to be that. That's what co-founders do. And Ed and I, without meaning to, fell into that role somehow. But how do you think that happened, Ed?
I think we were just very, very different people from day one. different backgrounds, different personalities, different interests.
Ed's
and
from
actually,
Wales.
Yeah. We just kind of assumed these roles that worked out. You were always going to be the front man, the kind of the face and somebody that really drives the brand awareness. Obviously, with your kind of Made in Chelsea and everything going on in your life at that moment, that naturally happened. And I was there to kind of do the bits that really I cared about and build the brand and build the business and the things that really interested me and got me going. So I guess it was just a really nice, natural point where we just both did the things we enjoyed doing and didn't have to ever sit down and say, okay, what do you want to do? What do I want to do? Now it's time to split. You need to do a bit of this, etc.
Yeah, but also, you know, you were working with a guy from Made in Chelsea and everyone says, oh God, this is why you got the profile and stuff like that. We had a lot of troubles in order to go through this process, didn't we? We had troubles with supermarkets and things like that.
So tough. And I think everybody thinks, okay, that must be the easy answer. That's why it succeeded. That's why it's done that. We were a sweets company without any sweets for 18 months. We didn't have any product and we just had to keep things going, just keep building the brand. I think it was hard work. People don't really care about the Made in Chelsea thing. I think it's great as a brand awareness piece, but actually eventually when the product sat on the shelf in Tesco, do people really care?
No. Well, that's the thing. Like it's a great way to get it to a point, but after a certain point, you know, a business has to stand on the basis of its product offering, right? You know, like people are only going to be, and actually the market is much bigger than people who watch Made in Chelsea.
Yeah,
so
exactly,
you want a product that appeals to the whole market.
I think we were always
niche it up.
I really just target. All I care about is Made in Chelsea fans. Yeah, so I'm just going to target them.
If you're posh, you're going to like us.
You're going to love them.
You're going to love them. But this is also the great thing about love this podcast is the fact this is probably the most serious podcast we've had in the
feels
world.
Quite serious. It I feel like feel I've come to be the sort of party pooper.
No, you haven't come. It's quite nice to actually mix things up. Like, I'm going to change the tone right now because I feel like I should read my diary and make it a bit more silly.
All right.
Yeah. Here we go. You ready for this? Tuesday. My business partner and I, Ed Williams, are occasionally asked to go and do different talks across the country to talk about entrepreneurship. And today...
Entrepreneurship.
Isn't that the word?
I'm not sure. I think it might be entrepreneurship.
Entrepreneurial.
We can edit that.
Okay, that's a different ship.
And today we were travelling to Manchester to do yet another one of them. I love the north of England. Everyone is so much more polite and nice. If you got on the tube in London and spoke to a stranger, you are considered a psychopath. If you don't speak to a stranger in Manchester, you are considered a psychopath. But being a southerner, it's hard to accustom yourself to the northern lifestyle in such a short time. We got back to the hotel around midnight and decided to test my skills with a stranger in reception.
That sounds dodgy.
Two things wrong with this. Firstly, no one, even northerners, don't want to talk to a stranger at 12 a.m. If someone is in their pyjamas in the hotel reception. And at 12 a.m. on a Wednesday morning, something has gone wrong if they are there in their pyjamas. But anyway, I thought it was a good thing to do. I approached my victim, who was standing next to a vending machine, and started a conversation with him about vending machines. He kept trying to shut me down, but I would find a way back into the convo until he finally locked eyes on me and said, I know you. I stood proud and said, in what? He couldn't remember, so I listed off my impressive repertoire. Bake Off, Murder and Successful, Made in Chelsea. Yes, that's it, he said. I watched you all the time in prison.
I actually thought you made these diary entries up until I remember this actually happened.
That actually happened. Yeah.
What, so you were going, so vending machines, eh?
Yeah.
And then he was like ignoring you. Oh, and then they're like, so what about vending machines, right?
Is it the Twix or the Whisper?
Yeah.
Thursday. I have discovered a game change in the Apple phone game. Another skill taught to me by my business partner, so listen close. I had the same problem as everyone else. When we type a message, text, whatever it is, we often make a mistake and have to perform that long-winded performance of holding our finger on the phone so that little circular magnifying glass appears, and then we can change the typo. We all know what I'm talking
about. Can't believe you're explaining this on the podcast anyway.
Not a convenient process. Look no further. Next time you make a typo, don't perform this, but instead hold down your spacebar button for a couple of seconds and thank me later. If any of you out there, yeah, see, Paulie's about to try it. If any of you have any magical tips like this, please get in touch. I need them in my life via social media, email, contact@privatepartspodcast.com. Just a little diary.
So Ed is, you know, he's your business partner.
He's your tech guru.
He's your tech guru. He's your mentor slash father figure.
Yeah. He's everything to me. He's everything. Paulie's our sound technician is actually trying it. Do you see what I mean? Isn't it good?
Wow.
Yeah, hey, it's awesome. There we go.
You're doing the good work. You're doing Apple's bidding. Spreading the good news.
Hey, Francis, also we need the question of the week, buddy.
Okay. Well, I've got two questions.
Oh, nice. Can't wait.
I'm not sure which one to use.
Oh, God, just go for whichever one you think.
What is the largest country in Europe? You might know this, Ed.
I know this. Why would Ed know, not me? Go on, Ed. Go on, give it a guess. Clever clogs. Russia. Russia's not in Europe. Yeah, that was me imitating you. What is it? I think I know what it is.
Obviously some kind of trick to this, I would have said. But is it maybe Italy?
No, I would say it's France.
Hmm.
Whose mouth did that come out of? Yours or France's? Yeah.
It's called the hexagon.
The hexagon.
Yeah, then it's France. It's France. I think I've got
Germany.
This
right.
Germany? You're saying Germany?
Hey, well, listen.
Maybe Germany.
Don't tell us now.
All right, I've got another question. In what country in the world can you marry a dead person?
What is that called if you marry a dead person?
Posthumous marriage.
Posthumous.
Posthumous. Posthumous marriage.
Is that how they died?
They died from the hummus.
Overdose.
Yeah. I reckon it's going to be somewhere like... it's got to be somewhere like Papua New Guinea.
What that is...
I might have seen this on a documentary with Grayson Perry recently.
Oh, yeah?
Was that a thing?
Or
maybe.
You went and investigated the way people celebrate death in different countries. And
so you're going... Okay, well, let's go... Why don't we go for continents?
It's a country.
Okay, yeah, I know, but let's go for continents.
All right, name the continent then.
Okay, I reckon South America.
All right.
Asia.
All right, well, we will see the answers in part two.
Hey, people, stick around for part two. We've still got Ed. We're going to talk more business and have a little bit of fun. See you in part two. Bye.